Please rise. Court is now in session. Please be seated.
Good morning. The court's ready to hear argument in Citizens Coalition versus the County Council. Are you ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor.
Very well. Now, I understand you're reserving 5 minutes. Is that correct?
That's correct, Justice Hall.
So I'm going to start the clock, and it's going to start at 20 minutes. The orange light will come on when you're into the rebuttal. You can continue, but, you know, it's going to be your total time that we're counting down.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Elwood T. Evelyn, Jr. I represent the Citizens Coalition and the individual appellants in this matter. The appellants have asked the court to review the decision of the Sussex County Council to rezone a parcel of land along the Route 1 corridor to permit high-density residential development, which would increase the number of units built on that parcel as opposed to the original plan more than threefold. The issue posed to the court concerns the council's failure to properly consider the advice and recommendations of those agencies charged with the duty under the statutory plan and the county's memorandum of understanding with the state to provide the technical expertise and opinions central to the grant of authority to county council under the plan. Key to looking at this case is the factual background in which the application that's before the court was submitted to county council.
I noticed in your opening brief, and you didn't mention these 27 findings of facts and 15 conditions. Weren't they before the county council?
They were presented to the county council, and I believe we did refer to them in the brief to the extent that we noted they were prepared by the attorney for the developer and submitted to the staff of the county council for reading into the record.
Well, my question is, as I read the record, the county administrator read these 27 facts and the 15 conditions before there was a vote.
That is correct.
And you're telling us that certain things weren't considered. Now, where do we find in the record that these things weren't considered?
Justice Allen, I don't think we're saying they weren't considered completely. What we're saying, very simply, is that there is direct contradiction between the recommendations and findings of DLDOT, of the Office of State Planning, of the Zoning and Planning Commission, and even in the letters submitted by Tidewater Utilities, and those facts found by the council that violate the memorandum of understanding and the spirit of the statutory grant of authority to county council, in which it is required to take the advice of these various agencies that are charged with the duty of making expert advice and opinion known to the county council in considering its deliberations. The core of our argument is essentially that you can't avoid finding facts and observing the requirements of the memorandum of understanding and the statutory guidelines simply by having the developer's attorney submit a statement of facts and approving it in order to bypass due process. The whole process of preparing these statement of facts that the developer does now in Sussex County has come about through the Cedarnet case, in which it was found by the court that you can't have a lack of finding of fact. Developers have resolved that by saying, okay, we'll prepare a set of findings of fact, we'll throw them in front of the council, and they can approve them. As we noted in the brief, Your Honor, this was the third time this application had been filed by this developer. It had twice before been rejected by the Land Planning Commission. The reason being that DLDOT, State Office of Planning, and the Commission itself clearly found that this was overdeveloping an area outside of what was the land regulatory plan that had been prepared by the county in careful consideration of the health, safety, and welfare of the citizens of Sussex County.
Can I interrupt for a second? If I understand correctly, you're significantly concerned about the factual findings and the fact that they were prepared by the developer and just read into the record and so forth. Do you dispute that there was something in the record that would support those factual findings?
I think that there is nothing in the factual record that supports the idea that this can possibly comply with the Memorandum of Understanding in regard to traffic and the level of service.
Okay, but I don't know that you answered my question. There were a list of factual findings.
Yes.
If you were looking to find some support for each of those factual findings in the record that was before the council, could you find that, or are you saying that there was nothing there but for the fair statement that we find X?
I think in many instances it would be true that there would be, to say that there would be no scintilla of evidence would be very difficult, because I think in some cases the developer couched these findings within the sort of backstop recommendations made by DelDOT, as they have to, after they say, under no circumstances do we think that this should be built, because it's a recommendation, generally speaking, they have to say, well, if you do build it, this is how it should be done, because they know the county council could make findings of fact under which, under the memorandum of understanding, there could be a factual finding that is in the interest of the health, safety, and welfare of Sussex County residents to have this project built and to overburden the roads of Sussex County. Unfortunately, in this case, they didn't do that. As we noted later in our brief, the memorandum of understanding and the statutory guidelines establish that, yes, you can overlook these recommendations and you can develop other findings of fact if you find that there is an overwhelming need. There was no overwhelming need in this case. What the developer was doing was going from 60 units to originally 214, and he eventually reduced that by 15% down to 183. But what he was doing throughout this was going from a singular family home kind of community to a high-density development, which was totally out of character with the community. Now, the direct finding in the Memorandum of Understanding was that it was within the character of the community. That factual finding is completely unsupported on the record. The nearest medium residential development is a half mile to a mile away at the plantations. There is nothing that is high residential within a mile, within 2 miles of the development, as proposed. It doesn't meet the character of the community and, in fact, goes in direct contradiction to the Memorandum of Understanding in that under the planned development of Sussex County, such high-density developments were supposed to be at town centers such as Lewis, Rehoboth, toward the town center of those developed areas. And, in fact, they were going away from that. So there needed to be a finding as to why to go away from that. And yet that wasn't done. So to that extent, I would argue that there is no evidence to support those findings. Looking at the situation as it came to the council, it is against the factual circumstance that this is the third application. It had been three times rejected by the council's own Land Use Planning Commission.
Well, it wasn't the same application each time, was it?
The only difference between the first two applications and the third application was that it took out a commercial use. And instead of asking for a mixed use that involved condominiums and commercial development, now ask solely for high-density residential use, which actually increased the number of units, which was then, once again, decreased as it went through the process, but only decreased from 214 to 183 units. The Land Use Planning Commission found, first of all, that that was out of character with the community. There is nothing in the findings of fact beyond the bold statement that is within the character of the surrounding community that, in fact, establishes that there's anything like it nearby. Second of all, they found that there was a lack of recreational amenities. At the land use planning hearing, the developer tried to sidestep that by saying, well, residents can walk to the plantations along Route 9, which is the major sort of bypass if you want to avoid Route 1 on those weekends when things are backed up to Milton.
What is the plantation? Is that high density?
That is a medium density residential development.
So you're saying that this density would be higher than the plantation density?
Yes, it would be, Justice Holland. In fact, that was dropped by the time that they got to the county council. At that point, the recreational amenities involved a bocce court, a horseshoe pit, and I believe there was one other thing. It might have been badminton or volleyball courts. It was, to say the least, an extremely inexpensive, it was a small amenity kind of plan, I guess you would call it. So there was still a basic lack of recreational facilities. The third finding was the concern over the traffic development at the Land Planning Commission. The council did meet that by trying to sidestep it, by simply saying, well, if a grid road's built, if...
We're sidestepping or imposing conditions?
They imposed some conditions, but the bottom line finding was that no matter what we do, this is going to fall into an F or an E category, so that it really doesn't hurt to build it. That was not, which I would consider a sidestepping of the recommendation. They were, in essence, deconstructing DLDOT's recommendation and ignoring the core of its opinion, which is, right now, we're going to have development on this property at some point. It's zoned for 60 homes. That would be a far better use, both as to the nature of the community and as to its impact on traffic, than 183 home development of condominiums. But if you do build it, this is what you have to do at a minimum. The core of the recommendation is clear. The core of the recommendation is don't build this because it doesn't fit in the piece that is the county development plan. One of the things in considering bringing this matter forward was a decision, and my opponent and I were both involved in the Deskus decision before Chancery Court, and now Justice Jacobs pointed out in that case, it's a good thing for county council to rely on the expert opinion given it by agencies such as DLDOT, such as the Office of State Planning, such as Land Use and Planning and Zoning. Why? Because county council doesn't have that expertise. In fact, Mr. Dukes at some point on the record indicated we have to rely on those agencies in order to give us information because we don't have that expertise. Yet in this case, the council ignored the clear opinions of each of those agencies and any other agencies that put forward an opinion in this case and said, if we build it, they will come. And And I think one of the major things that they pointed out at the end, and one of the facts that doesn't appear in the findings of fact, but in fact is a finding on the record at the time the vote was taken, was this is a local developer. He's not going to move away. He's here.
But you say there's no Geldot, and looking at the conditions just quickly, I see Geldot referred to in number 4, number 5, and number 7. Now, admittedly, they didn't follow everything that Geldot recommended, but that really comes to the heart of the issue on appeal. If the county council has the ultimate decision, and they have the benefit of Geldot's advice and the advice of other people with expertise, it appears that the current standard of review gives them latitude to accept some but not all of the things. Where, as a matter of law, do we find reversible error here?
I think you find it in a pattern in which the county council not only, you know, the county council is charged by the statute in 9 Delaware Code to have these studies done. It's a clear inference that they're supposed to give weight to these studies. And although, as the court points out, they've adopted some of the recommendations of Geldot, the fact still remains that they've ignored the thrust of its recommendation and the thrust of the recommendation of the other advising agencies. And the question is, if as a matter of law, this is not at a point where the court can find that there's a violation of 9 Delaware Code in the Memorandum of Understanding, at what point? And the only other point that you can go by beyond this is if they make no findings of fact whatsoever, get together and say, we're going to approve it because we feel like it. They're never going to
do
that.
That was the Green case a long time ago. They're not doing that anymore.
I understand they're not doing that anymore, but having factual findings prepared by the developer's attorney and putting their rubber stamp on it, when, and this is significant, the county staff never even put forward for consideration before there was a vote as a potential finding of fact, all the findings of fact that were made by Geldot, by the Office of State Planning, and by the Land Use and Zoning Commission.
Mr. Zivan, I just want to note that you have 3 minutes of your total time left. Do you want to say that or continue now?
I will save it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honor. Justice Holland, Justice Berger, Justice Ridgely. I represent the developers, Mr. Fanning, Country Life Homes in this case, and this is the opportunity I have to respond. I must begin by perhaps conceding my inadequacy because I don't think I can do a better job than Vice Chancellor Parsons did in his opinion, because he addressed all of the arguments that Mr. Evelyn continues to address to the court without even referencing that which the Vice Chancellor Blow went to some great length to point out where the record supported the opposite findings. For example, Justice Holland, you referenced the 27 findings of fact. Actually, I think there were 29. There were 2 under letter A and 27 under letter B. In my answering brief in this court and in the court below, on each finding of fact, I went to the record and pointed out in the record where there's a factual basis to support that finding of fact. That was all findings of fact in the hearing aspect of it. To the extent that any of the 27 findings of fact involve some conclusion, I tried to reference the facts upon which that conclusion would be based. That's found on pages 19 to 23, I believe, of our answering brief in this case. And we meticulously attempted to find each and every factual reference in the record, at least one or more, I should say, for all the findings of fact, which County Council not only had in front of them, which was not only read into the record, but if you look at the appendix, you'll see that there was some debate going back and forth on some of those items before some of the County Council persons. For example, one of the findings of fact related to water, which was the adequacy of the water supply, which was referenced in the opening brief by Mr. Evelyn. And there are letters from Tidewater several occasions. They're found at pages A111 and A133 3 and 134, in which Tidewater addresses first in the initial letter the amount of supply, and then secondly in the follow-up letter in response indicates that the available water, quote, can easily supply, end of quote, this development without any adverse impact upon the water supply or any adjacent community. It's found at A111, 133, and 134 in the record in this case, and there's no response to our arguments either below or in the reply brief, because although we pointed out all these record references in our answering brief, there's no reply brief that ever addresses any of them.
What's your response to these things are merely rubber stamped by counsel? I think that was alluded to.
Does
that argument have merit?
I think it's a disservice to elected officials. I think that the findings of fact in this case, and that's why we went to the painstaking effort of showing that in the record there is support for each of the findings that was made. There was, and I think the Vice Chancellor summed it up best, and I'll try to paraphrase what he was saying. This was a long involved process. There was a give and take on both sides. There was a give and take from the agencies. The agencies came back with recommendations, conditions. If you, Sussex County, in your discretion, which you have the ultimate say on, decide to do this, this is what we would like to see that you consider from a highway point of view. State Planning Office basically adopted just the DLDOT recommendations, although there was also some comment as to type and size, and that was taken into consideration because the first application was 214, the second one was 193 or 194, and it ended up at 185. So even the earlier comments were taken into effect. You can take the DLDOT 4 recommendations if you decide. They were all incorporated into various aspects of the plan, either in the findings or, more importantly, in the conditions. So that each of the agencies that came back with some comment, they were considered and incorporated by County Council when they passed it. To say this is a rubber stamp, I think you can make that argument when there's no substantive discussion, where there's no change, where the commercial, it was B1 commercial in the original plan. It's gone. It's not in the approved plan, the approved zoning change. It was dropped. That was one of the criticisms. It was removed. The size at 214 units was a criticism. They went with 193 or 194, whatever the number was. That was changed down to 185. In fact, the only council person that voted against this, Cole, indicated he would pass it with 125 units as opposed to 185. So I think it's a disservice to the elected officials to say this was a rubber stamp.
Well, getting back to the issue about the submitting your findings of fact, was there anything to prevent the Citizens Coalition from submitting a proposed set of findings of fact also?
Nothing at all.
So in essence, this is no different than when you have a trial, frequently a bench trial, and the court asks the parties at the end of the trial, please submit your proposed findings of fact and conclusions of law, and then the court can adopt them or not as the court sees fit.
That is correct. And in addition to that, in the proposed findings of fact that were actually filed in this case, it incorporates some of the adverse comments or the recommendations or the suggestions that came from other agencies and then addressed how they were addressed in the findings of fact. So you have a complete record with not only the findings but the conditions. For example, my opponent referenced the recreational area. Well, if you go to the conditions, condition number 9, and it wasn't just one of two things, condition number 9, the applicant will provide the following recreational facilities upon completion of 50% of the construction. It lists 9 separate items: picnic pavilion, barbecue pits, outdoor shuffleboard, horseshoes, croquet court.
Well, let me follow up on Justice Berger's question. If I understand how this situation has evolved where proposed findings are presented, is that after 3 decades of litigating Sussex County zoning cases, beginning with Green, where the county council didn't have something on the record to support what it did, and apparently to this day the county council doesn't take an active participation in defending its decision, even though Mr. Schrader's here, you're representing the developer, you know, it's your brief, you took the lead. The custom has evolved that the developer, who has the vested interest in the application, and the people who have a vested interest in opposing it, are now each given the opportunity to make the record to support the vote that the county council makes at the end of the day.
That's correct.
And in fact, this record remained open for 30 days more after the hearing. So you had the opponents in this case had 30 days more to put other things into the record. If my notes are correct, and I do have them here.
So then, going back to the analogy Justice Berger made, as you know, in the family courts, for example, where you have to fill out these requests for ancillary relief, each side in a domestic matter is given an opportunity to submit proposed findings to the court. And that's where we are today in looking at these records on zoning appeals. Is that right?
That's correct. The hearing was held, and I do have the dates, and it's in the record. The hearing was held on January 8th of 2002. It was left open for 30 days. The vote did not occur until March 19, 2002, basically with the exception, I believe, of one additional letter that was sent in from Citizens Coalition. The record and the evidence and the documents were all in the record as of January 8, 2002. So they had the same opportunity as the developer to submit whatever proposed findings of fact that they wanted to submit in any way, shape, or form they wanted to do that.
Now, what would our standard of review be here? Is I read the Vice Chancellor's opinion. He said, if you look at the entire record, there might have been reasonable differences of opinion. However, if we look at the record that preceded the vote, I find substantial evidence to support what the County Council did.
And that is consistent with what I believe to be the court's review of the matter, the standard for review for this court also. And the Vice Chancellor did more than that, because he then, after he addressed each of the items that the Citizens Coalition raises, for example, the memo of understanding, when the Vice Chancellor got to the reviewing first, the Vice Chancellor reviewed the November 20th, 2000 initial letter from DelDOT, which said that although Route 275 would remain at level D, the intersection of 275 and 24 would decline to E. There then were two subsequent letters in connection from DelDOT, which were in the record and which are found in the appendix to this court at B1 through 6. That's the December 11, 2000 traffic impact study done by the Davis firm, the engineering firm, saying possibly the intersection could accommodate traffic. That's from December 11th of 2000. And then there's another traffic impact study by the Davis firm, which is found at A75 to 88, which says that with modifications to signal phasing, the intersection would operate at an acceptable LLS level of service D in 2003. So that's all in the record in this case. The Vice Chancellor went through that, through the record in this case, and then he said, Sussex County Council addressed those issues, addressed the memorandum of understanding in findings of fact 19 and 23. They also touched on it in findings of fact 20. And then they imposed conditions 4, 5, and 10 to meet DelDOT's recommendations if County Council elected in its discretion to proceed. So it was the Vice Chancellor listened to the arguments from Citizens Coalition, then went to the record and deferred to the facts in the record, the findings in the record, the conditions imposed, and then applied the appropriate standard. And the Vice Chancellor did that not just for the memo of understanding, which is the primary basis for the appeal here, did that for the traffic impact study.
Now, where did those conditions, who suggested them in the first instance?
For example, the traffic conditions that came from DelDOT, the original conditions from DelDOT were in the November 20th letter, which is found at A69 to A74, and they became four of the conditions, and they're found in this letter. Then the State Planning Commission, 2 months later on January 8th, 2001, in its summary on pages 66 and 67 of the appendix, summarized those four conditions. They basically, other than a general objection as to type and size, the State Planning Commission based their objections on the four conditions from DelDOT if they went forward. And then those four conditions were incorporated into the developer's plan to meet the comments if Sussex County Council decided to proceed.
And Mr. Stickles read the 27 findings of fact and the 15 conditions.
Yes.
Asking Justice Ridgely's question another way, was what he was reading something the developer submitted?
Yes. And the developer's counsel incorporated those comments from the agencies in the conditions or into the findings of fact to address them so they'd be part of the record and they'd be part of the approval for this plan, that these conditions, one of which, for example, mine, the recreational area.
But the developer had access to the hearing that had preceded the vote and proposed these findings of facts, and then listening to what people had said in response, proposed these 15 conditions. And theoretically, something could have been given to Mr. Sickles to read that say, the opponents suggest that it be 125 units, not 185, and the opponents suggest these 22 conditions rather than these 15, and then the council could have debated it and voted.
Absolutely correct. And in fact, everybody had access to these documents because they were part of the record. If, unless the court has any additional questions, I have no further arguments to the court. Thank you. Thank you.
Do you have anything in reply? You still have 3 minutes.
Yes, Your Honor.
Justice, I just have a few comments. First of all, as to one of the issues that I think you discussed extensively with Mr. Weiner. In fact, the testimony shows, and if you refer to A343 and 344, 345, what actually occurred is that Mr. Cole raised the question of where do these factual findings come from. And although it's conceded that they were prepared by the developer, Mr. Sickles' testimony at the time was that Mr. Lank and myself have prepared findings, and we have taken what was suggested by the applicant in his testimony and also by the other people who testified. He then went on to say, if we are left with two options here this morning, one, if you are willing to follow the recommendation of the commission, and he had already indicated that the commission had voted 5-0 to oppose, we don't have to get into the findings of fact if you agree with those. If you're going to deviate from what they did, we need to look at findings since they have recommended denial. And also, Mr. Lank and I have developed conditions. In fact, he then went ahead and read what had been prepared by the developer. These were findings of fact that were sent directly to Mr. Lank, Mr. Sickles. They were not reviewed by anyone in advance.
Did your clients submit any proposed findings?
They did not. They've never been advised by county council that proposed findings of fact from them would be acceptable. And in fact, as Mr. Sickles testified, it's been their position, the administrator's position, that in fact Mr. Sickles and Mr. Lank prepared these factual findings. They did, at the hearing, indicate that, well, you can also consider what the commission found in their 5-0 vote. Once again, and I know my time is running short, I think this case comes down to a very practical review and consideration if on one side the county council can end run any requirement of green by sitting politely, listening to the witnesses, and then finding the facts submitted by the developer, well, green hasn't done anything to advance the cause of due process. And when it makes findings that are in direct contradiction to two prior applications, the findings of the various state agencies, and I know Mr. Weiner said there were substantial changes, but I think you can see for yourself, there's not substantial changes in this plan.
Well, didn't the Vice Chancellor conclude there were?
The Vice Chancellor concluded that there were modifications. He did not, as I recall it, refer to them as substantial changes. He noted that there was a 14% reduction in the size and that there had been modifications suggested by DelDOT if the county council decided to build apart from its core recommendation that
actually,
not be built.
He used the word significant changes.
Okay.
This is page 14 of his opinion.
Thank you, Mr. Rubenstein.
Thank you.
Well, thank you both very much. The court will take this matter under advisement and we will adjourn.
Hear me. All manner of persons having anything before the Supreme Court of the State of Delaware may now depart and give their attendance to the call of the court. The court is now adjourned. God save the state and the court.